Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we have 1987's The Living Daylights. We have moved on to a new Bond.
Indeed we have.
So, Brother Jay, you're our Bond expert. You want to fill us in on Timothy Dalton's first outing?
All right. So, The Living Daylights, a summer release for Bond, July 31st, 1987... Budgeted estimated at $30 million, gross of about $51 million. It's pretty long for a Bond movie. It's 2 hours 10 minutes was my copy. It's the first Dalton, the first of two Dalton, Timothy Dalton Bond movies. Some people think this is the best Bond movie, although I don't think so. I think they haven't seen enough of the other ones. But certainly this is a very different direction than the Roger Moore that versions we've been watching the previous months.
Just so I understood you correctly, some people think this is the best James Bond movie of all the James Bond movies?
Yes.
Wow. Those people, well, they think differently than I do.
Go figure. But hey, your favorite, skiing, is in this one too.
So it's only taken, which of the Bond movies is this in the number scheme?
Oh, hell, I don't know.
46.
Yeah, it seems like it. So,
hold on. I will pull up the data. I have a chart.
I was thinking of doing a, like a 200th episode where we did a little, some outtakes, but I thought we could do it like a little My Brother and Me style. Answering questions, giving advice, just for fun. And one of the questions of the My Brother and Me brothers were, which one of you is the handsome one, which one of you is the smart one, and which one of you is the bad boy? And I'm about to admit that my only option is the bad boy, because it's taken me however many movies to figure out that which section of the video store did James Bond movies supposed to go? What if you had a video store, what section would you put them in?
Action.
Foreign.
I would put them in comedy. They're all comedies. It took me this far to figure out making a spoof of a James Bond movie a la Johnny English is kind of pointless, because James Bond is a parody of himself.
This is the 14th film, by the way.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than that.
It's the 15th film.
Yeah, because we've had 25 more, right? Was Skyfall number 25?
So Living Daylights is 15, License to Kill 16, GoldenEye 17, Tomorrow Never Dies 18, World Is Not Enough 19, Die Another Day 20, Casino Royale 21, Quantum of Solace 22, Skyfall 23, Spectre 24.
Oh, so 25 is coming up.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for saying Solace.
Yes. What do people say?
I've heard you say Solace mostly.
No, I say Solace because I hate that movie.
No.
Because it's just a piece of trash.
It's better than The Living Daylights.
No. We could argue that when we get there, but...
Okay, so I have a question for you both.
Yes.
Is Timothy Dalton too old to play Bond in this movie?
Well, he's no older than Roger Moore.
Oh, no, he's 10 years younger than Roger Moore at least, right? Maybe 15?
Yeah. I don't think he was too old. I just think he was awkward. He was kind of angular and clumsy. He didn't seem comfortable.
I liked him. He didn't strike me as being too old. I liked his charm. But I think he was not done any favors by the wild swings of tone in this movie.
Also, this was a much less gadgety Bond.
Oh, yeah. There weren't very many gadgets at all.
There was almost no Bond gadgets. They had the car and his Philips remote control.
There were a couple Philips items.
Yeah. And, I mean, this was also kind of a sexless James Bond. Not completely, but...
Well, this is a one-woman Bond movie.
Yeah.
He didn't hump it out with anybody.
Well, there was a woman on the boat.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
But no, I thought the switch to Timothy Dalton from Roger Moore was refreshing. I mean, I didn't think Dalton was the problem in this movie.
Well, going from Moore to Dalton, I think you're right in that. If you went from Moore to Craig, that would be a much more jarring contrast.
What, it's Skip Brosnan?
No, I mean, just if you changed the order around, going from Roger Moore at the very last Roger Moore movie, where it was just bonkers in tone. Because if I remember correctly, the Daniel Craig, it has some... Casino Royale has more problems for me than it does for you, for at least Jason, I know. But it's not goofy.
You shut your whore mouth. What do you mean? What's wrong with Casino Royale? I love that movie.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it again someday.
I think we could re-release a podcast about it.
We could. We could re-record a podcast with all three of us about it.
By the way, are we nearing episode 200?
We are. This one, I think, is 194. Yeah.
You know what would be really fun to roll out in episode 200? Our official, not in a creepy way, top 10 list.
Yes, we could do that. Okay, so two things. First of all, what did you guys think about the cold open on Gibraltar?
I was amazed. I didn't know that there were little critters all over Gibraltar.
The monkeys?
Yeah. That seemed curiously distracting.
I was optimistic about how dark it kind of was. People died. Like, good guys died. Yeah, so I was really anticipating.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the bat.
Like a darker, more serious Bond. Just one of the many tonal shifts in this movie.
I thought the action was pretty standard Bond, but good. I love the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
I like the little, the touches with the paintball. And it was standard stuff. I mean, it wasn't really... They didn't do anything they hadn't done before. Maybe even better before. But it's a nice way to introduce Bond.
Yeah, I guess my overall... One of my biggest disappointments with this is they didn't capitalize on having a new Bond to really take any chances. And part of that maybe is... I mean, this is the exact same director as the last Bond, the Roger Moore one, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And, I think there are just some missed opportunities there to really try out some new stuff. Instead, I think they just kind of watered it down.
Well, they definitely went with the formula.
Yeah.
Except for less sex.
And less gadgets. I mean, the car, like I said, the car was the gadget. That was pretty much it.
Yep. Well, and the keychain.
Yeah. Which was nearly anecdotal.
It was also the silliest, maybe, of all the Bond gadgets to date.
And as the movie went on, I kept comparing this to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Because of Pushkin?
Just because of the set of this desert plight, the airplane assault scene. They're trying to, there's so many parallels.
Well, I know we get into this territory, I think, with Pierce Brosnan, but isn't this the first of the movies where James Bond helps Osama bin Laden? I mean, wasn't Osama bin Laden part of the Mujahideen?
Yes.
So, you know, it's crazy times. Then again, it was very popular to be pro-Mujahideen in 1987.
Different. There was a different time. The movie was clearly in a different time because it's still Cold War.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, okay, so we. What do we think of the title sequence?
It took me a while because I was trying to place the music, and I thought, who the hell is this? These voices are slightly familiar.
Me too. I thought the very same thing.
I just couldn't place it, and then when I found out who it was, I
was looking for that Eureka moment, that moment where I could say,
right.
Oh, I see what you're doing. What I liked about it was the style of music flowed from the score in the cold open, because the score had like that like synth pop mixed with the standard James Bond theme. It was sort of like the intro to the Fine Young Cannibal song, She Drives Me Crazy, sort of mixed in with the James Bond theme over and over again. So yeah, moving right into Aha. Nicely done, Eric.
No.
It flowed. I thought it flowed well. It was odd. I guess Aha was having a moment at the time.
Well, I think it was odd because if you listen to the rest of the music, not the score, but the actual music, by the way, I guess John Barry, who did the score, did not get along with Aha. But what was funny was you could tell that the Pretenders actually had a Bond theme that was in the running.
Yeah, because it closed the film.
Yeah, is this the first movie that had a different, entirely different end credit song?
I think it is, yes. Yeah, it's crazy how much... Pretenders you get to hear in this movie.
I love the Pretenders, by the way.
It's because they're better.
Well, yeah, I don't deny that.
They went with Aha because Aha was the more popular band at the time. But there were a lot of music things in here where maybe it's just getting too close to... I mean, 1987, that's the year I graduated high school. So this would be my prime formative music years, or I don't know. There's some sort of word for it, phrase for
my
it.
My freshman year.
So, you know, obviously Aha was a big thing. Journey has been singing the song that she heard from a commercial. And she was surprised that I sang along with her at one point. Don't you forget about me. And so Journey was like, you know this song? I'm like, I live this song.
Did you put your fist up in the air and freeze frame?
No, but that's funny. There, when we get to the part where M demonstrates the, not M, sorry, Q demonstrates the ghetto blaster. What's funny is the James Bonding podcast guys were talking about how in the 80s, because it did sound like 80s music coming out of a ghetto blaster. It was actually pretty good. It wasn't quite as bad as the Star Trek 4. Where they had the punk rock guy. Instead, it sounded like Joe Satriani, as a matter of fact. So that's kind of hilarious. So maybe it's just cutting too close to home, as now these things are becoming more familiar. And they're weaving things in that I can understand, where they made musical jokes throughout the whole series that I didn't get.
Now we'll be able to determine if Bond is marketed for the generation that it's produced in, or if it's truly they're trying to market it without an age.
Yeah, it's funny because Bond has always kind of surfed the trends with gadgets and with sports.
Cars.
Yeah, cars, yep. Some might say fashion. Apparently, while you are under contract as James Bond, you're not allowed to wear a tuxedo in another production.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, so you can't
especially be... how much they're forking over the money.
Yeah. They don't want you to use the Bond brand for your own products.
Was that a problem with the Tailor of Panama? I think it might have been.
Well, I know in the remake of the Thomas Crown Affair, he never wore a tux, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, although I will note that one of my notes in this movie is, so you know, Timothy Dalton does wear a tux very well, so that was great. But there were an awful lot of members-only jackets in this movie. Particularly
again, it was the 80s.
It's the worst. So, okay. So, from the title sequence, we go to Bratislava, Czechoslovakia, the former Soviet state.
The former Republic of Czechoslovakia.
Yes. Bond is there to help Agent Saunders, played by Thomas Wheatley, from Station V, conduct the defection of KGB officer General Yorgi Kazkov, played by...
Falco. It's Falco.
It is. It is Falco. Der Kommissar is in town. Played by Jaron Krabbe.
Has he been in
all kinds of stuff?
I was gonna ask, has he been in anything besides this and The Fugitive?
Yes.
He's been in a lot of films as the Russian bad guy. Maybe not the lead Russian bad guy always, but lots and lots of films. And he's Dutch, so he's been in lots of Dutch films. Was his Russian accent particularly bad to you guys?
It was terrible. It was more German than Dutch, Russian.
Yeah, it was like he was speaking English in a Russian accent, except every time he said yes, he was like da da da.
He was in Ocean's 12. He was in Immortal Beloved, The Prince of Tides. Oh, he was in Kafka. He was in Robin Hood, 1991.
The Kevin Costner one?
Was 91, yeah. Well, no, 91 was Costner.
Costner was Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, it wasn't called Robin Hood.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was the other one with the Sleeping with the Enemy dude that came out around the same time, right?
He was in Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Nah, there it is.
The Sleeping with the Enemy dude. We're not talking about Jason Patrick, right?
No, the
Who is the Sleeping with the Enemy dude?
The evil, creepy OCD husband.
Yeah. The titular enemy.
That she was sleeping with. Because they were married.
Yes.
Patrick Bergen?
Patrick Bergen. There you go. I was going to say Tom Bergeron.
They're pretty much the same person. Was he Robin Hood?
Yes, Patrick Bergen was Robin Hood.
Uma Thurman was Maid Marian.
Jenny Manhans?
David Morrissey was Little John.
Morrissey? Little John?
David Morrissey.
He's so sad. Hoping for socialism, but under this monarchy, it's not going to happen.
Social vegetarianism.
Yeah, so...
Morrissey is a human sexual.
Living Daylights.
And very popular among the Mexicans.
So Kazkov escapes through this strange... the pig pipe.
Yeah, well, okay, but before we get to that, this scene where they help Kazkov defect, and he shoots the Russian sniper, but merely wounds her, does not kill her. That is the entire short story, The Living Daylights. And the idea was that, and in the short story, at the end, he says that, and he never met the sniper in the movie, he just assumes she either will lose her entire left hand, or she'll lose her taste or her nerve to continue in the sniper business.
You mean in the book, not the movie?
Yeah, in the short story, yes.
Gotcha.
Yep. So just this part of it is the short story. Everything else is just... this is the last of the Ian Fleming. Well, until
that's disappointing because I was ready and happy to blame Ian Fleming for this mess, but sadly no,
not at all. Although I thought the pig scene was kind of fun, and the naughty Czech technician was hilarious.
Except that her boobs have the power to both deafen and blind?
Well, distract. They interfere with his OODA loop. And anytime somebody unzips a jumpsuit and comes at you in a sexual manner, I think that's already something that's going to distract you.
I expected her to have a little tightly wound bun, hair on the sides of her ears, and to be coming out of space balls.
And also tightly wound balls of hair underneath her arms.
Zipper jumpsuits, that's the entire plot of Cannonball Run and Cannonball Run 2, right?
Well, that's yes. Definitely the Adrian Barbeau section.
But so he enters the pig and he exits in Austria. He is Falco.
Oh, yes. And then they take a Harrier jet, which, by the way, of all the gadgets, the Harrier jet is the best.
It is.
Yeah, I really did enjoy, with everything that's been going on in my life, I really did enjoy a plot point that had to do with picking a pipeline.
Also, and maybe this is, I mean, obviously they do have pigs to go through pipelines, but there seemed to be a pretty serious 90-degree turn.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would have a hard time negotiating that kind of a turn.
But you had to get it up to pressure, so, you know, at least at that kind of pressure, you're pretty well assured there's not, you know, not an obvious leak.
No, but you can't send the pig 90 degrees no matter how much pressure you have.
Wah, wah.
Well, no, that's not true. If you have enough pressure, you could do it.
But it, maybe only once, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an engineer, but... although, I don't understand why, if there wasn't enough pressure, it would turn him into borscht.
I don't know. That didn't make sense.
Maybe because it wouldn't go anywhere and it would alert everybody that there was still this pig that was waiting there to go out unscheduled.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it wouldn't reach its destination.
Or launch at all.
Well, because basically all pipelines are just basically like potato guns, right?
Yeah, that's all they are.
Actually, what was the pressure for? Because doesn't the pig move on its own?
Some do. Others, yeah, you just pressure them up and shoot them along.
Oh, okay, like a potato gun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, excellent. So, okay, this isn't even the first pig in a Bond movie we've seen, right?
Nope.
I think we had a pig in Las Vegas.
And in fact, it will not be the last.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know... pipelines are very handy. So, oh, by the way, yeah, we meet the cellist / sniper is Miriam Dabo, who I didn't realize is the cousin of Olivia Dabo from The Wonder Years and a bunch of other fun stuff.
How did you not? They look alike.
Yeah, but she Miriam definitely was more wooden, I think, than I've seen. Or maybe she just hasn't had as much comedy.
Did you notice that, by the way, Bond was driving an Audi repeatedly throughout the movie?
Oh, sweet.
I mean, they had the Aston Martin scene, but a lot of the time he spent driving an Audi.
Well, so you know, they went through those unfortunate Lotus years, so we'll have to push through the Audis. And he had a BMW in at least one of the Pierce Brosnans, right?
Yes, several.
A magic BMW.
Oh, that's true. Invisible, yes. Right? Okay. So, yeah. So, they go to a post-defection briefing. And this is where we learned, and I don't know, maybe it just seemed incongruous. It just sort of shocked me because we've been through the Roger Moore years. But James Bond is smoking a cigarette. Which just seems weird in modern Bond.
Still the 80s.
And style choice.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, so we go to this safe house in the country.
Where it's proven that the kitchen really is one of the most dangerous rooms in the house.
Who would have thought, or at least, sorry, I didn't think, that the best hand-to-hand action scene in this whole movie would not involve James Bond. It would involve an unnamed MI6 guy fighting with Necros the Assassin.
Yeah, so Necros was a badass villain in this scene. And that's it.
Yeah, he's pretty much just a pool boy the rest of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. That's part of the wandering tone that really bothered me, is it really set Necros up to be a really good foil for Bond. And then there's like the huge finale at the end. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but this is relevant. There's a huge finale at the end when just so much shit is going down. And Necros is pretty much just standing behind a Jeep watching everything.
Oh, most definitely. Where, yeah.
You know, in this early one, he's like a man of action who's taking on like the entire safe house full of spies and operatives.
With milk bombs.
Well, yeah, I mean, besides the milk bombs and the headphones garrote, just the scene in the kitchen. I mean, looking, because now I've seen it three times in the last week. The scene in the kitchen is amazing.
There's a lot going on.
It is choreographed so well. It's like an Eastern Promises type scene. It could be, you know, except for some goofy parts, it could be super gritty. But the milk bombs set you back a little bit and make it more fun again. Although people are legitimately being blown to pieces inside the safe house. Yeah. So it's a shame that the rake secret gadget detector in the front of the house catches Bond for having a... pistol, but doesn't warn anybody of a milk truck full of milk bombs. Seems like too much of a unitasker for my Alton Brown sensibilities.
Indeed. And also it only apparently detects people who are trying to come in the front door.
Yes. Yeah, I like Necros in this the beginning. I agree. He was fun. He was slick.
He was menacing. I mean, he was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah, he was a stone-cold assassin.
Very, very disappointing for the rest of the movie after this.
And then they apparently... the assassin guy comes into the safe house, which you'd think MI6's safe house would be a little bit better protected, but I think that's the point.
You'd think their security would be a tad tighter, especially for agency having regulations for outside deliveries.
It's the flu, mate.
Yeah.
Well, he gave him the pat down. I mean, what he needed was a pat down like the TSA would give an autistic boy, but no, he just gets a little tap, 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 and you're on the way.
Perhaps no liquids over 3 ounces.
Ah, there you go. That would have takes care of all the milk bombs. Now we know. So, if he had, speaking of movie...
Pudding pops.
I was going to say, speaking of going to the movies, if he had thrown one of those bottles and it didn't explode, would that be a milk dud?
Oh...
But I'm
aha. Anyway, we learn in through exposition that with again a little funny touch, the worst German accent ever from Koskov, but I like the stenographer.
You mean Russian?
I'm sorry. What did I say?
German.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, Heidi, your German accent is so Russian.
yet. So the worst Russian accent ever. But I love the fact that the stenographer keeps moving the microphone around to catch his...
attention to detail, man.
I love that. And then they whisk him out on a medical helicopter. And all of a sudden, MI6 has egg on their face because they've lost a defected general. After they've announced it to the world that the general has defected. Like, they didn't waste any time.
And one tall blonde dude with a carton of milk, like, killed 40 people.
And disabled their whole operation.
Well, we're not really worried about death toll in this movie. Especially in the very first pre-credit scene, James Bond, after watching two other 00s getting killed in a training mission, he asked for another hour before the debrief so he could do it.
After having been driven down a mountain... by a truck full of explosives, which is on fire.
Yes.
Wait, how did you know they were explosives?
Because it said explosives written all over them.
Exactly.
Oh.
They had that little cartoon XXX all over it.
Then Bond needs to go, and he is tasked to kill... Oh, sorry. In the exposition during the house, we learn that Koskov defected because his superior in the KGB, General Pushkin... is a madman, a psychopath.
The new devil.
He's revived the old policies of Smertspinam.
So dumb. So dumb.
That's meaning death despised.
I don't know how any of them could say that with a straight face.
So, but Bond knows Pushkin. They have a history.
You know what's even more menacing than trying to say Schmierzbienum is seeing it seeing it written on a balloon.
That was, yeah, that was, exactly.
That was bad, chilling.
In bad cursive.
Yeah. Oh, that's still going to haunt me.
Well, the balloon thing, though, should be reminiscent of the new It trailer that came out.
Hey, I saw that. I will not be seeing that movie, but boyfriend Jesse wants to. Nope, 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 nope.
That'll be fun.
Nope. 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 Not happening.
Was, I don't know, maybe because I didn't, that was one of the first Stephen Kings I didn't read, that the TV movie was sort of silly.
Go figure. ABC?
Yeah, I think so. It probably would have been at that time, yeah. So
go figure.
Sorry, before that, you remember that sniper girl? She was also a cellist, and she got winged by Bond's bullet, so she's got a left hand within a... in a little bit of some sort of bandage. Well, Bond searches through their, all their, or has Q run her through their database of cellists and wacky Russian assassins. She poses as a child, and her main way of killing? Teddy bear bomb.
Oh, like that's any more absurd than a milk bomb?
Oh, no, not at all. No, no. Well, okay. Or a ghetto blaster.
This dude just beat an enemy agent to death in a kitchen with a pot, and then they go and talk about teddy bear bombs. It's ridiculous. Yes.
And they have the couch.
That actually looked really comfortable.
So we go and we meet Kara Milova. So she's the cellist. Apparently she is at a Stradivarius cello.
Apparently.
Yeah. That, spoiler, gets a bullet hole in it.
That's fine.
Yeah. And she plays at the end. Yeah, apparently it doesn't change the
tone that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you leave it there.
I was yelling at the TV at that point.
Like, at least put a piece of
chewing gum.
Yeah, just something over it. Like an old Neil Young guitar. Just put a Jimi Hendrix sticker on it and call it good. Or at this point, they should have put a Phillips sticker on it.
Or they should put the Smirnoff Betznov or whatever it was.
Soy bomb.
That's for the win. So, yeah. So, he has goofy stuff with Kara, who... This is a tradition of Bond ladies who are pretty wooden in their performance. But also, Bond isn't really trying to seduce her at first. Well, he's using the game or whatever. He's trying to get into the friend zone because he's a friend of her beloved, because she is Koskov's girlfriend. So Bond plays a friend of Koskov and then tries to get into her pants the entire time. So seems less than gentlemanly on Bond's part.
Yeah, so they have that whole... got to get you out of the country as soon as possible. And, oh, no, I left my cello.
Yep.
Like, really? Come on.
Yeah, there's also the scene, the bathroom scene where Bond pulls the gun out of the cello case.
Why was that necessary?
It wasn't.
Other than to see that there were blanks.
Well, never trust a sweeping guy because he's probably an enemy agent.
Or he's tapping his foot in the stall.
He's either a secret agent or a Republican congressman.
Then we escape. By the way, in a communist country with very non-distinct cars, he has an Aston Martin, which is going to stand out a bit.
Oh yeah, everybody else should be driving Yugos and whatnot.
Yeah, but then they take off through the chase, which is where we end up with the goddamn skiing.
Well, so...
Of course you love the skiing, I know.
No, it's not the skiing. No, I thought the cello...
You can defend it all you want. You know you do. You know you love it.
I've never downhill skied in my life, okay? So, but I will tell you that I love the fact that... What do they call them? The outriggers?
Yes.
That pop out and allow him to ski with his Aston Martin. Yes. And then when they blow his tire out with some sort of like anti-tank gun, he then immediately uses that to his advantage by making it a very stylish ice cutter.
Yeah. He's a multitasker.
It is. Again, Alton Brown would approve of that. So, yeah, so that was kind of fun.
This whole chase scene was from an entirely different movie than we've been experiencing up to this point.
Oh, I agree. And you know, I mean, this is for real. The writers thought about, like, hey, we need to get Bond to lead a chase down the mountain in a cello case. Make that possible. I mean, I'm sure that was the orders. Just do it. Make it possible. I know we can do it. Well, we could take the cello out and use it as sort of a makeshift rudder. Yes, go with it. Just go with it. It's a Stradivarius. It'll be fine. Yeah. You would think she would immediately say, we are not sledding down this hill on this Stradivarius. We are not. We are not. We are not. We are not.
She has no agency in this movie at all, ever, for any moment.
I agree. Yes.
She's like the lamest character I can remember.
Oh, we skipped over another particularly lame character. Saunders. Cause we met Saunders when he and Bond are sort of sniping at each other. Okay. Here's maybe the reason I thought Timothy Dalton's Bond was too old in this is because he comes off as being weary in this movie. Like he's too old for this shit in his first movie. Like, this isn't beginning Bond. This isn't where he gets his 00 like Daniel Craig does.
Yeah, I mean, that's an entirely different tone that was sort of set up in that first scene that you said was based on the short story. But he changes. I mean, he becomes a different Bond for no reason.
Yeah. So we have skiing. And come on, it's pretty great.
I started to get really bored at this point in the movie.
But then we have the appearance of J.W. Pepper.
I know, J.W. Pepper in military gear. I love it. Only J.W. Pepper would have the gall to have life-size mannequins of all the world's great military leaders as himself.
And then we get a little scene where Bond is getting a little date rapey. Don't think, just let it happen.
God. Yeah, that's not great. But we have, again, Pushkin meets J.W. Pepper, who really is Brad Whitaker. It's a pretty great American name. Played by none other than Joe Don Baker. And where do we know Joe Don Baker from? We've talked about a Joe Don Baker movie.
Refresh our memory.
Oh, I don't have it written down.
Wait.
Come on, man. What, nobody does their homework? I mean, I didn't do my homework? Yeah.
You know, I had an 11th grade English teacher who, my least favorite teacher of any of my teachers in any part of my schooling, she would give like the most difficult quizzes based on our reading assignments.
Who was that?
Her name was Miss. I remember we were reading The Chosen. Terrible book. And I never did any of the reading assignments because I was an asshole. But so I faked my way through all the quizzes just based on class discussions. And there was one question that every single person got wrong. And
except for you?
No. Everybody. And it turns out it was because it was an impossible question. And it was revealed that her MO was to think up random questions without knowing the answers, assuming that, you know, the smarter kids in the class would be able to provide the answer. So she actually had no answer key. And it turned out she asked a question that was like, what's the name of this person's sister? And they were never actually named in the book.
Sweet.
So Eric just pulled that one on us.
Okay. Mud.
Mud. He beat me to it.
Yeah. He was king in Mud.
He's also in Joe Dirt.
He is. He's also in Congo. We need to do Congo. Congo is awesome. That's another Tim Curry movie.
Oh, he's also in Tomorrow Never Dies with Pierce Brosnan.
No, he's in two more Bond movies.
Ah.
Yeah, he's in Tomorrow Never Dies, and he's in GoldenEye.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mars Attacks.
He's in Fletch, The Natural. He was Buford Pusser in Walking Tall.
Cape Fear.
The original?
Leonard Part 6.
Oh, excellent, yes.
Well, the 91 Cape Fear.
Which I think is probably a better movie than the 60s or 50s Cape Fear, as it turns out. But, yeah. So, Brad Whitaker is an arms dealer. He specializes in crazy high-tech guns. Small arms. Crazy high-tech small arms.
As opposed to small hands?
It's a whole different thing. Yada, yada, yada. We end up with Mujahideen.
Is this not the lamest Felix Leiter we've seen?
Oh, it is. It's the worst Felix Leiter, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was really, I don't know, disappointed. I think this whole movie was disappointing.
Me too.
I had remembered it being better than it actually was.
I don't know. I think Drew is right in that it just didn't push any boundaries. It just used the same old formula, and Timothy Dalton was fine, although he was much better in another movie we talked about, which is
not Shaun of the Dead, but
yes,
the Cops and Robbers one.
Yep.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, that has my favorite Timothy Dalton moment ever, when he's sitting there with the picture of himself in the background making the same face.
Oh, it's great. He's great in that movie.
That makes me laugh every time. But neither one of you watched Penny Dreadful, right?
No. It's on my list, but...
He's really good in Penny Dreadful, playing a very dark, brooding character. But he's great. He's got chops.
Yeah. No, he's like I said, he's my favorite part of Hot Fuzz. Except for that Yarg guy. Let's see. I mean, really, we could yada yada quite a bit of this.
Was the fake heart really necessary?
No, it was the worst. It was just the worst. I mean, please tell me that really exists, that you actually have some sort of battery connected to. I can't believe that.
No.
Possible. Yeah.
No, you wouldn't stress the heart with electricity. That would be stupid.
Well, wait. Just roll back your medical degree here for a second. How else are you going to make sure that the heart can keep pumping? It's no longer in the body. Think about it. Science.
I think we learned from Mary Shelley that it's all galvanic response, right? So you just got to keep it going.
A lot of times, they just like to keep them. They like to keep live cadavers. They just keep them alive in the body.
Well, this, don't donate your body to science.
No shit.
This is how Christian Slater got his heart.
And then they have this all Mujahideen business, which is very reference heavy. Were they trying to show that the Afghani war was all wrong? Was this supposed to be comedy or satire, or was this commentary? I mean, what
it's commentary because at the time, the Russians had been fighting against the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and were famously getting trounced. Just like, as it turns out, the Americans had problems going into Afghanistan to fight a land war, because you know you're not fighting in territory that you know, and yeah, there's thousands of years of history that's not on your side.
And how come the horses weren't all spooked by the bullets and explosions?
They're Mujahideen horses.
Yeah, they're used to it. They live in Afghanistan.
Jeez. Exactly. Jeez.
Well, one part that I got a little offended about was when Bond figured out what they were transporting. He's like, raw opium worth $100 kajillion on the streets of New York. Like that was a little unnecessary, James Bond. There are other places in the world that like their opium.
Oh yeah, actually the opium, especially in 1987. In 1987, you couldn't even find heroin for all the cocaine in America. So heroin was way bigger in Great Britain till recently.
Train spotting.
Although New York has had a heroin problem a long time. Anyway, I'm not a drug expert. I'm not an expert in anything. I'm not the smart brother or the attractive brother.
So at the end of the movie where Bond is gone, I have to go defuse this bomb. Boyfriend Jesse cut this movie to the quick at that point. He said, why wouldn't you just throw the bomb off the plane?
Except because you need it later.
Just throw it out the door.
Yeah.
Well, when he said diffuse, when he really meant switch off.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, when he opened that bag and there were 3 seconds left, I thought, oh, shit. You don't even have time to say red wire, green wire.
It's like the longest MacGruber skit ever.
M, like Mancy. It's an Archer reference. Okay. Also, when the plane hit the cliff and exploded, it was out of fuel. What was left to explode?
Oh, heroin is quite combustible. Do you know the International Red Cross protested this movie because they used the Red Cross symbol on all the bags of heroin?
What, they were afraid things were going to be a little scrutiny? Maybe it was too close to home?
It seems reasonable that you would not like that. But yeah, so we have this thing with diamonds, and we have this thing with Pushkin. We fake Pushkin's death. So we've faked deaths of all sorts of people. And let's see, blah, 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 dropped a bomb on a bridge to save the Mujahideen from the evil Soviets. We go to Karachi, have dinner.
White savior syndrome.
You know, the Brits, well, their colonial attitude, they've been doing that a long time. That just comes naturally. He'll be back to take their land momentarily. So, Bond returns to Tangier to sneak into Whitaker's home. And Whitaker is playing his little war games, which, you know, Whitaker has a pretty fantastic life when you think about it. He's enjoying himself. This is a man who enjoys himself.
He has the best remote control ever.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yes. His one remote control. It is the first universal remote control.
He also has bulletproof fabric. Like 20 years before John Wick.
Have you seen John Wick 2?
Yes.
Is it as good as people say it is? That's an unfair question. Did you enjoy it?
It's very fun.
Excellent. That's all you want in a Keanu Reeves movie?
Yeah, it's fun.
And he does it all to save his dog or something, right? Or they killed his dog and he has to have revenge. Maybe I'm misreading the the jokes about it.
No, the first movie, they killed his dog and stole his car.
Ah, so now he has to go out for payback.
So it's a country song.
It is a country song, indeed.
It's the dog that his wife had delivered on the day of her death. Because she knew she was dying.
Way to bring us down. Jeez.
That would be a dog I would be sending back. She's not here. No witnesses. Take it back.
As you like to say, we all bring our own baggage on this trip.
Exactly, yeah. So we have the fight between Whitaker and Bond, and
not really the fight, as the unbalanced arms tirade.
Yeah, it wasn't really. I mean, again, the best fight in this whole movie was in the kitchen. So Bond ends up getting rid of Whitaker, and
but not with the milk bomb, but with the magic remote control.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and with his keychain.
Did this movie come out the same year as Roadhouse? Because this also involved like a big statue falling on somebody at the end of the movie.
Yeah, if he just had a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And then Pushkin returns.
Roadhouse was 89, so.
Ah, okay. So
this was 87.
Roadhouse stole it from here. But Bond never gets to, or Necros doesn't yell at Bomb, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
He was such a badass, he didn't have to yell that. You just knew.
Now, Necros has never been in prison. Come on. He's a better guy. So, in not really Bond tradition, this is the first time that we don't have M and the rest of the world leaders catching James Bond doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have, you know, a little nod to that. But suddenly the sniper defector cellist with the slightly damaged Stradivarius is now given a special passport where she can just come and go as she pleases. Sure, that doesn't set off any flags to the intelligence community.
Yeah, why would it?
So, the living daylights.
We glossed over the horrible carnival scene, glass door crushing of.
Yes, I yada yada as a nightmare.
Yeah.
An absolute nightmare.
With the door with the exposed visually accessible gears.
Yeah, that is some door, too. Would never pass OSHA requirements in the United States.
Well, it's a special Schmierzblieslin door.
Exactly.
It's from IKEA?
I'm pretty sure.
Can you imagine how gigantic? You'd have to lift that Allen wrench with two hands. So, yeah, no, you're right. And the balloon and everything, it was,
Yeah, this movie had lots of problems, and there were not a lot of solutions, so it was just bad.
There's no
glossing over this. This was just bad. And it's not bad enough, can't be bad to be bad good. It was just bad.
I'll count that as your verdict. Brother Drew, was it worth it?
No, I was so bored by this movie. It started out really well. I was invested in seeing a new Bond after watching so many Roger Moore movies. And before I had seen this, I was wondering why there were only two Timothy Dalton movies. But unless it gets significantly better in the next one, I can see why there were only two.
Well, shall we discuss the whole thing about Pierce Brosnan? Or we have already done that to death. About the fact that he was signed to be this Bond, was leaving his house to go to the press conference, and got a call from NBC saying that, upon further review, Remedy and Steel has been renewed for the next three seasons.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah, Remington Steel had been canceled. And so he was set to be Bond. Like, literally, they were going to make him Bond. It was a whole thing. Everybody was happy about it. Everybody in the world seemed to be, if I remember correctly at the time, because 1987 was also prime time for me to be into pop culture. Remington Steel was pretty popular, but always like, oh, you know, we wish we could have someone like that as James Bond. So Pierce Brosnan, being a young, dapper guy who's also English, or I guess he's Irish, ends up getting signed on as the next Bond. Except that when NBC had this, there was a write-in campaign or whatever saying, like, wanting him to stay on. And so NBC used that as a reason why they decided to exercise their right, even past the poor ratings or whatever, to renew it for three seasons. And so literally he was on the way out of his house, like at 6 o'clock or 5 minutes before 6 o'clock, at the very last day of the 30 days, he got a call saying, oh yeah, you've been renewed for 3 years. Sorry, you can't be James Bond. And the next season, the fifth season, they only aired five episodes before canceling it.
Aw. Yeah.
And then somewhere in this time, his wife died.
Probably good for him that he didn't appear in this movie.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the next one. I don't remember anything about the next one, and I'm worried that it's going to be bad.
I think your worries will be realized.
That's such a bummer.
Well, I know we're going to have some fun with Pierce Brosnan, even though those aren't technically the greatest movies either. But yeah, it is such a bummer. I was looking forward to this one, and I did not get what I wanted. I was left wanting.
Come on, you've got Tina Turner and Terry Hatcher and Alan Cummings. I mean, you've got some great people coming up in the next Bonds past.
Well, hold on,
Timothy Dalton.
Well, so. No, who's in the next Timothy Dalton movie? Let's give us something to hope for. Give me hope.
Can please. We just talk about that movie now and then skip to Goldeneye?
it's too bad.
License to Kill? Is that the next one?
Yep.
Oh, the poster looks terrible. Oh, John Glenn again? Are you kidding? Come on.
Robert Davi. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, he's amazing.
Benicio del Toro.
For real?
Wayne Newton. Wayne Newton does not play himself, okay? let's just think about that for just a second. Wayne Newton is playing a character.
Wayne Newton is Felix Leiter.
Cary Lowell.
Felix Leiter is David Hedison, who was Felix Leiter in Live and Let Die.
Cary Lowell, who is Jamie Ross from Law and Order.
Priscilla Barnes.
Yeah.
Terry.
Oh, this is going to be deliciously terrible.
Wow. That's going to have to be what I'm going to... Rafer Johnson. Let's see. Olympic athlete. Oh, boy. Yeah, it's going to be... So who are... Let's see. Who are the Bond girls? Cary Lowell. This is another... is this another sexless Bond?
I don't remember.
Or maybe this is the condom Bond. Because remember, there was a whole AIDS thing where Bond had to wear a condom.
Okay.
It was a thing. So, anyway, yeah. So, our first, we have completed, checked off half of our Timothy Dalton Bond catalog. So, we are well on our way to Pierce Brosnan. After one little movie left, which actually is, I think, coming up pretty quickly.
Yeah. If Goldeneye isn't good, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. I won't be able to take it. Because I really remember it being good.
It was the best video game.
Never played it.
Golden, I will not let you down.
Okay, I'm counting on it. I'm trying to hold out for it.
Yeah, Goldeneye. I am invincible. Alan Cummings.
Okay. I love Alan Cummings, though. For the Anderson Brothers. Oh, what did you think of the outro, by the way? Did you listen to it?
You're so sad.
Did it make me a little sad?
It was too pleading.
Well, I was like, I had to stop. I was walking from the parking garage to the office building at work. I had to stop in the corner. I'm like, no, stop.
Oh, well, I have one more different one that's
it's different. No.
What is
no.
Was that a new outro you recorded, or was that original to December 2015?
It was a new one I recorded months and months and months. It may have been in 2015. I mean, it was probably early 2016. I recorded two. I had some time. I think you guys maybe had some technical difficulties or something. And I was just started down here, like, trying to come up with a different outro because I was bored with the old
dude,
outro.
Paint some color on those walls or something.
In my room, you mean, or?
Wait! Don't take it personally. I had to turn off all my lights and make sure my garbage can was closed.
That's funny. So,
but you didn't turn your ice maker off.
Ka-chunk.
There was no ice today.
You turned your ice maker off.
I did.
Oh, you're the best. That's awesome. That is going above and beyond, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, we've come to the end of another show. Not in a Creepy Way has been brought to you by the Brothers Anderson. Eric, Jason, and Drew, thank you each individually and collectively for listening. Did you like what you hear? Tell a friend. Comment to us. Please send us feedback. Send it to show@notinacreepyway.com. Or you can like us on the Facebook page, Not in a Creepy Way. Or you can tweet at us, @not_creepy. There's a whole bunch of ways to communicate with us. We're talking in your head right now. Come on, throw us a bone. Anybody listening, can you send us a little feedback to ASMR @notinacreepyway.com?
Manscaped.com. I'm cutting your hair. I'm giving you a slight shoulder massage. Nothing sexual. Not in a creepy way. .com. Pull out the curtain.